Welcome to the Just Pod, a podcast by the Criminal Justice Section of the ABA, the unified voice of criminal justice. Welcome to this episode of the Just Pod. Today we are joined by Michael Moore. Michael, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Michael is the Beadle County State's Attorney and also the other co-chair of the Prosecution Function Committee. We've heard from his counterpart, Melba Pearson, on here a couple of times, and now it's Mike's turn to give us some insights.
Yeah, I like Melba, and like I told Emily before, you probably have downgraded from having me on as compared to Melba, so I'll try to follow in her footsteps and do the best that I can, but I'm not Melba.
Right. Well, we'll take what we can get. I'm sure it'll be great. Melba's always said kind things about you on here, too, when we made mention of that. So, in fact, actually, she was just talking about the book that you participated in last time she was
on. We did that, Prosecutor Discretion.
Yeah, Can They Do That?
Can They Do That? Yeah, that's a good book. You should get it.
Yeah. Can you remind us what you contributed to the book, Can They Do That, before we hop into our discussion?
Yeah, so different people wrote chapters for the book, and I authored one chapter of the book. I'm kind of the more traditionalist view. So I think a lot of the want to see prosecutors do progressive things, and I'm all for progressive things, but I think that ultimately we have to follow the law. And if we want to change the law, we need to go to the legislature. That's the process. Melba's one voice of, you know, more traditional prosecutor discretion, that we don't have the discretion not to follow the law. We have the discretion to, in an individual case, to make charges and make decisions, but we don't have the authority to just say we're not going to prosecute this crime, because if it's the law, we should probably do that. So that's kind of my chapter, but I think that was kind of a contrary view to what most of the other individuals that authored chapters wrote.
Gotcha.
That's why Melba got me.
Right. Well, but that's worth noting, though, right, as we have a discussion around prosecutorial discretion, right, and what is up to their discretion or not, and that there are different viewpoints. So certainly valuable contribution to it, by all means. So today we're going to get your insights on how a grand jury works. That's why we've asked Mike here. Is there's been several cases in the news where there's mention of a grand jury. And so for our listeners, we want to just bring some light to what a grand jury's function is, what role it's supposed to serve, and what it's not supposed to serve as. And if it's different in each state, just all that sort of thing we're going to talk about today. So first, let's start at the beginning. Since we have a wide range of listeners, Mike, would you please define what a grand jury is for us and explain why they exist?
Yes, like a grand jury is just a group of citizens that within their jurisdiction, they are just ordinary people, and they are selected to sit on what we call a grand jury. And a grand jury looks at cases. They're involved in the investigation process. So they hear the case. They might hear the case in a bigger grand jury over time as the case goes on. But their role is to listen to what the evidence is and then make a determination of whether there's enough evidence for this individual, whoever the suspect is or the target of the grand jury investigation, and whoever that person is there enough evidence for that case to move on to the next step, which would be trial. So they determine whether a person is charged, arrested, and whether those charges proceed to the next part, and they generally call that a petit jury. So that's the difference. So the grand jury is the investigative jury that determine that whether there's probable cause for the case to continue. And a petit jury is the beyond a reasonable doubt. The most traditional ones that you usually see on TV and stuff would be petit jury. The grand jury is different. They sit longer. They hear a variety of different cases, and they make those determinations whether there's probable cause or not.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. So there'll be a little overlap with your last answer, but why do cases go to a grand jury? And also, if I may add on to that, how do they distinguish if a case is eligible to go to a grand jury?
And that can vary by state. So what cases are eligible for a grand jury it's another thing. We talked about prosecutor discretion at the beginning. That's a lot of it's within the prosecutor's discretion. What cases do they want to present to the grand jury? And individual prosecutors might have different opinions on what cases they present, what cases they don't present to the grand jury. Generally speaking, in the Constitution, there's the grand jury process is set up. That's where the grand jury was originally established. A lot of states now have preliminary hearings, which it's kind of the same thing. It's a probable cause hearing in front of a judge, but the grand jury is separate. And usually my experience is that the grand juries will hear cases that are kind of more in detail, more complicated cases, not your ordinary run-of-the-mill cases. Like, you're not going to take a DWI case a lot of times to the grand jury, or a possession of drugs. It's going to be more of a conspiracy drug case, or a sexual assault case, or a child sexual assault case, or a homicide. Something a little bit more complicated than the ordinary case will be generally presented to the grand jury. But some prosecutors will just run all their cases in front of the grand jury. So anybody, any case they get that meets the criteria, usually they're felony cases or cases that can result in a person going to jail for a year, those can be presented to the grand jury. And a lot of prosecutors, even in my state, will, instead of going in front of a judge for a preliminary hearing, they'll go in front of a grand jury to determine whether that case proceeds or not.
Okay. So again, there's some overlap here, but I just want to make sure that we're not missing anything. Let's talk a little bit more about how does a grand jury work?
Yeah, so a grand jury is, as we talked about, is constructed of citizens from the jurisdiction you're in. In South Dakota, the grand jury can consist of 10 people, but it has to have at least six. So it's at least six, no more than 10. And like in Beadle County, I can have as many grand juries seated as I want, but each one can only have up to 10 people and has to have at least six. So how it works then is, for me to get a grand jury, I would have to make a request to the court. So I would inform the court that I would like to have a grand jury seated. The clerk of courts then would draw jurors out, kind of like what they do with a petit jury. They just draw random names out. They would bring them in, and we would then seat a grand jury. And once they get the case, then they get to hear evidence. Now, usually the prosecutor is the only person that appears in front of the grand jury. And there's probably a recording device, either a court reporter or some type of an electronic recording device about what's going on in the grand jury. Witnesses are called by the prosecutor. Questions are asked. Grand jurors usually have an opportunity to ask questions. And then a case is given to them and they make the decision. And in South Dakota, they need six votes in favor of what we call a true bill. So a true bill means that the case should go forward. If they no bill it, that means the case will not go forward. And so that's kind of how it works. It's just a process that we use to have a probable cause finding. And once you have a probable cause finding, then the case can proceed in the process to what we would do, arraignment, where the person pleads guilty or not guilty, and then ultimately a jury trial.
Okay, thanks so much for sharing all of that with us. The reason why we're having this conversation today is because it feels fairly timely given some prominent cases in the news. Most recently, the case of Breonna Taylor. So if you could please help us contextualize the role of the grand juries in some of these recent cases. Also, you know, looking at the recent charges brought against Paul Manafort and Michael Flynn, and as a result, the Russia collusion investigation. So talk about some things that are standard or things of note that we can look for when we're trying to follow the news in these cases and make sense of this and how the grand juries played a role in these cases. And also, if you could just call out some things that our listeners should be mindful of while they try and follow these cases. For example, why is there so much secrecy with a grand jury's proceedings? What's the rhyme or reason behind that?
Yeah, so like one of the things to point out on a grand jury, it's a tool of the prosecution. It's an investigative tool. I think the most common thing you hear is that you can indict, which is the term used when you true bill it or something, when you indict somebody, you can indict a ham sandwich, right? If you're a prosecutor. prosecutors do have a lot of influence in the grand jury process. They determine which witnesses are called, what evidence is presented, what evidence is not presented. And like in the Breonna Taylor case, they make a recommendation on charges, or they present paperwork that has the charges on it. That's kind of the standard practice. And I think a lot of people don't understand that. And I think a lot of prosecutors kind of bow away from that a little bit. They kind of, you know, the grand jury is really making the decision. And it's true, the grand jurors do make decisions, but they are influenced, you know, because you're dealing with citizens. They're not lawyers. Most of the time, they're not lawyers. They've never been to the process before. And you, as the prosecutor, determine what evidence they hear. I mean, they don't know what the crimes are. They don't know what the laws are. They don't know what the elements of the crimes are. And some prosecutors do a pretty good job of trying to explain all that to a grand jury and let them make the decision. But I think it would be naive to think that the prosecutor doesn't have a great deal of influence on that based on what we talked about. So that's kind of one thing to keep in mind when you're talking about a grand jury. I think it's a good process. It's necessary. It's better than an individual prosecutor making those decisions. It's kind of like anything else in the criminal justice system. I mean, you're only as good as the person that's your elected prosecutor. I think that's why the prosecutor is important. I mean, if you have a bad egg in there, a bad actor, you're going to have bad results. And so prosecutors have to take that duty seriously and responsibly and present the right evidence and try to do the right thing. But I think it's good to be mindful of that process, that it is controlled by the prosecution. There's no defense witnesses. You can, as a prosecutor, present what we'd consider exculpatory or other evidence, you know, that would benefit the defendant, but that's not done very often. You know, we just want to get the case in and get the case indicted and then move on to the next phase. And it's not a final phase. So the worst that can happen is the person gets arrested and then it goes to the next phase. And if there's not beyond a reasonable doubt, the person's not going to be convicted. So there's some safeguards there, but you should be mindful of that as a prosecutor, what influence you do have over the grand jurors, and try to conduct yourself professionally and honorably in that process. And when that doesn't happen, then we get ourselves into some trouble. And the proceedings are a secret. And the reason that they're secret is that a lot of times, like we said, it's an investigative tool. So we might be investigating something that is ongoing. So we don't want the targets of our investigation to know we're investigating and we're presenting evidence against them. We're trying to gather information, and the grand jury process allows us to do that. And also, if there's a no bill, or we present our evidence and the grand jury decides not to do anything, well, then that person's protected from that. If you were the target of the investigation, that's sealed now. So you're protected from that. You know, usually once they're indicted, the grand jury transcripts and stuff will become available, because as that process goes forward, the defendant has a right to know what was done. But the secrecy is good, because the grand jurors want to feel like they should be able to make the decision that they think is appropriate without repercussions from the public or the media. And that generally works to their advantage. But in the Breonna Taylor case, it's kind of interesting, because the grand jurors are the ones that came and said, hey, wait a second, you know, we're getting chastised for our decision here. And what the prosecutor is saying in the media might not necessarily be the truth. You know, we might have more to say about that. And it kind of comes out then in what charges were presented to them. You know, what options were they given? And it appears that they were limited, that they weren't given homicide instructions or negligent homicide or reckless homicide or whatever those were. They weren't presented with that. They were presented with documents just to indict the one officer, which they did indict, but they weren't given, or at least they feel like they're not given an opportunity. And I could see that from a grand jury standpoint, because again, you're talking about citizens that are in there listening. And if you don't give them an indictment on somebody, they're thinking, well, we're not even going to consider charging that person. Now they absolutely have the right to charge whatever they want. And they're told that at the beginning of the process. But again, it's citizens that don't really know what's doing. If they've heard other cases, it's always the case that they're indicting that is the one presented, the paperwork's presented to them. Could they even type up an indictment? You know, the grand jurors, I would say that's unlikely. Were they given choices about other charges? You know, were they told by the prosecutor, hey, if you want to do something else, you can ask me. I can then type up that document for you. But it doesn't seem like any of that was done. And that's what I say is you kind of steer them the way that you want the case to go. And I believe that that's kind of the concerning thing about the Breonna Taylor case, is that they might have been steered that way by the prosecutor, because that prosecutor felt that there wasn't enough evidence to proceed to trial against those other officers. But the prosecutor has the absolute right to make that decision without the grand jury process. The prosecutor didn't have to present that. If the prosecutor already decided that these officers did not commit a crime, then stand on that and make your decision and say it and say why you didn't do that. But it seems like they tried to pass the buck to the grand jury, and then the grand jury gets blamed. And it's really interesting in that case that this is probably the first time, at least that I remember, where the prosecutor gets called out by the grand jurors on that. So I think it's a good lesson to learn for both law enforcement prosecutors and other grand jurors, is that you do have some authority and some power to not let these prosecutors do that. And I've heard that other times with prosecutors, well, you know, it's a hard case, and instead of doing what the decision is that they're going to make on a case, they want to say, well, we're going to present it to the grand jury and let the grand jury decide. But really, are you really doing that? I mean, or are you just trying to have another person to blame? Say, hey, we presented to the grand jury and they didn't indict. They only indicted on this. And that's kind of the way it was done in the Breonna Taylor case. And then all of a sudden the grand jurors come out and say, hey, no, wait a second. So it's kind of an interesting process that I think the prosecutor should, if I believe that there's not enough evidence to proceed, I don't think that I should present it to the grand jury. Now, there was another case. One of my friends, Don Klein, who's the elected prosecutor in Omaha, he had a case, and it was about the protest and stuff that were going on. And there was this bar owner that killed a person, killed a black male, and the bar owner was white. And there was an investigation done, and Don concluded that there wasn't enough to charge. He thought the bar owner was acting in self-defense. And so he made that conclusion. Well, when he made that conclusion, he got called out. Political backlash, there was more protests. So he then agreed to allow a special prosecutor to be appointed and allowed the special prosecutor to present the case to the grand jury. So I can see both sides. In my opinion, Don tried to do the right thing. He saw the cases. He said, hey, I don't think there's enough to charge this bar owner, and here's why. And he laid it out for everybody. But the backlash he got, then he said, hey, yeah, let a special prosecutor do it. Appoint somebody, and a person was appointed, and that person presented to the grand jury. Same result. Grand jury didn't indict him. But that case kind of got resolved because the target of the investigation, the bar owner, actually committed suicide. So then there's no case to bring against anybody. But the grand jury made the same conclusion that Don Klein made. And so it's just kind of an interesting process of that, the grand jury process of how that can work and go in different directions and what they're used for. But they shouldn't be used as a cover. They shouldn't be used as a scapegoat by a prosecutor. They need to be used as they were intended, as an investigation. And they should make an honest decision on whether there's enough evidence to proceed. And, you know, the last one, Paul Manafort and Michael Flynn, I didn't know that those cases were much about the grand jury process as they are about whether they can dismiss the case or something. But that's probably a different podcast you have. I'm not going to delve back for that one, right? So, but they did do, those are, you seated a grand jury to do an investigation, and it was a long process. There was a lot of evidence submitted, and it's just kind of a way that the prosecutor used to pool this evidence together and present it to a grand jury and allow these individual citizens to listen and then cast what they felt were the appropriate indictments. And again, it's influenced by what the prosecutor is doing, by what evidence was presented. But in those types of cases, I think more evidence is presented to a grand jury than in a normal case. I mean, that grand jury met for years, I think. They were over a matter of years, where when I submit a case to my grand jury, it might be over a matter of 30 minutes, 1 hour. That's a long case for us. So these kind of special grand juries, the Russian collusion case and other large conspiracy cases like that, a grand jury is just specially seated just to hear that case. And again, that's their role, is to do the investigation. And a grand jury in the Constitution and state laws has authority to do that type of investigation. And it allows prosecutors to get information like subpoenas and things like that that wouldn't otherwise be available to us if we didn't have a grand jury seated.
Okay, that's a lot of good insight. Thank you so much. Kind of some hard examples. It's hard to hear of anyone committing suicide, but it's part of, yeah, it's hard times right now. And that would be, I'm sure, a lot, whether, you know, whatever shook out. It's, yeah, thank you so much for all of your insight and helping us kind of make sense of grand juries and their role. I think one thing that I'm curious to follow up on is what varies from state to state with the grand jury. I think you touched on this, but just for clarity, if you could, or does it vary from state to state, or is it pretty consistent? Could you just touch on that again for me before we wrap up?
Yeah, so grand juries vary from state to state. Probably some of the minor ones would be the number of grand jurors that are called. You know, like I said, in South Dakota, we can have up to 10. Some grand juries are larger than that, have more people than that. And then what cases can be presented to the grand jury varies state by state. It's in the United States Constitution. So the federal U.S. Attorney's offices use a grand jury a lot. And statutorily, a lot of states have started to enact a preliminary hearing process where there's a hearing in front of a judge or a magistrate judge. So that's one thing. But and in some states, the grand jury is no longer valid. You can't use a grand jury anymore. So I guess that's the 101 version of how they vary from state to state. So you're talking about size, cases they can hear, and whether you can actually present a case to a grand jury or you have to have a preliminary hearing.
Yeah, 101 level's good for this. Right. I'm going in. Sorry, Mike, not trying to ask you to itemize each state statute on that, but that was a really good overview for us. Thank you. Do you feel like there's anything we've missed as we're trying to help our listeners get insight into the grand jury process? Anything else that we didn't touch on?
Not that I can think of.
Well, thank you again, Mike, for all of your insight. And again, speaking to the recent cases in the news, the Breonna Taylor case specifically, I think that's of particular interest to our listeners. So we appreciate it. So thank you again. And thank you to our listeners for joining us on this episode of the Just Pod.